Okay, so a couple things. First of all, homework set 8 was due on Monday. Of course, it's that's just to stay concurrent with the lecture. Homework set 9 is covers some material that we'll finish up today, finding eigenvectors and eigenvalues and their algebraic and geometric multiplicities. So I'll assign that today. I haven't yet posted it to WebAssign, but as soon as I get back to my office, I'll do that. And then looks like we'll have, besides homework set 9, there'll be a last problem set, homework problem set 10, that I'll assign probably next week. But at any rate, I've already posted all the solutions to the WebAssign problems. Well, sample solutions. Because, of course, the individual problems that you solve are going to be different numerically than the ones that that I do in my solutions. But you can see how each problem is to be approached by looking at the published solutions. Okay, so what I want to do today is rehash real quickly the discussion of eigenvectors and eigenvalues. I'm going to introduce some more nomenclature, so-called algebraic and geometric multiplicities that are associated with an eigenvalue. And then the main purpose of today's lecture is just to work through some examples where all this stuff is calculated. So let me start by reviewing the so-called eigenvector-eigenvalue problem, which begins with a stated matrix, call it A. Let's make it specifically an n by n matrix. And the idea is for that given matrix to find vectors v and numbers lambda, so that at least on these vectors, matrix multiplication is equivalent to scalar multiplication. Now, one thing you should notice here is that for a given number lambda, for a given vector v, there's only going to be one possible choice of a number lambda, because you can't satisfy two equations of this form where the right-hand side changes. The left-hand side is staying the same. So you can't have two different eigenvalues for the same eigenvector. But the same equation also shows you that if you have one eigenvector and you multiply it by a scalar, you know, say you multiply it by 2, 2v will still satisfy the same equation because you end up multiplying both sides of the equation by the same number. So the upshot of this is for any particular eigenvector, there's only one eigenvalue, but for any particular eigenvalue, there may be multiple eigenvectors. So that would suggest that maybe we should find the eigenvectors first and then find the eigenvalues, because the eigenvalues would be determined by the eigenvectors, but in fact, we do it in the exact opposite way. First thing we do is we find the allowable eigenvalue, and then for each eigenvalue, we find the corresponding eigenvector. And what will happen is the solutions of this equation for a given eigenvalue lambda, well, that's going to be a subspace. So it's going to be an infinite set of vectors in general. It's going to be a null space of a particular matrix, in fact. So the nomenclature is the numbers that work in such an equation are called the eigenvalues, and the vectors that work are called the corresponding eigenvectors. One thing to keep in the back of your mind is that you can always satisfy this equation by substituting the zero vector on both sides, but that's the one solution that we're least interested in. And so the crux of the eigenvector problem is to find non-zero vectors that satisfy this an equation like that. All right, so the way we solved it is, first of all, we took the condition we're seeking and we wrote it in more linear algebraic terms. When I phrase the same condition by a single matrix times a vector is equal to zero, well, so here X is playing the role of V. This displays the eigenvectors as the solutions of a homogeneous linear system. A certain coefficient matrix times a vector is equal to zero. And so what we do is we want more than just a solution of this equation. we want to find non-zero solutions. And we have a theorem that actually the fundamental theorem of invertible matrices said that the only way you can have multiple solutions of this equation is when the determinant of the coefficient matrix is equal to zero. And so to find non-zero vectors that satisfy this condition or equivalently equation two, you need this determinant to vanish. And that's going to give us a condition that determines our eigenvalues. Okay, so because the determinant of this actually determines whether or not lambda is an eigenvalue or not, having that equal to zero, and the fact that a determinant is always a polynomial in the entries of the corresponding matrix, we use the determinant of A minus lambda I to create a polynomial in lambda. That's going to be called the characteristic polynomial of the matrix A, and it's going to depend on a parameter lambda. Actually, I should call that an indeterminate lambda. So by indeterminate, the language is such that I don't really care what it is. It's just a symbol. And in fact, the big surprise is that so the usual thing you do when you evaluate a polynomial is you take the variable and you substitute a number for it, and then you evaluate it. Actually, it's a theorem that if instead of substituting in a number for lambda, instead I substitute in the original matrix, it satisfies the characteristic equation. So what I'm saying is that, let me write it out this way. If PA of lambda is defined as the determinant of A minus lambda times I, that's going to equal some polynomial in lambda. So it's going to be an expression of the form, actually it's going to be a monic polynomial, it'll be lambda to the n plus some coefficient an minus 1, lambda to the n minus 1, etc., plus a1 lambda plus a0. That's a typical nth order polynomial. A statement is that it's called the I guess it's Cayley's theorem, but I won't name it because I'm not sure. The surprising fact is, sure, yeah, you can substitute numbers for those lambdas and then evaluate the polynomial at a point corresponding to that number. But what's also true is that if you replace lambda by the matrix, these powers are still going to be defined. You can take a square matrix and multiply it times itself, and you'll get another square matrix at the same size. These are square matrices, so n by n times n by n is always going to be an n by n matrix. So these powers of a matrix would all be defined. And what you'll find is that this is the zero n by n matrix. So that's surprising, is that the matrix itself satisfies the same polynomial equation as its eigenvalues do. All right, but don't worry about this. This is just sort of a remarkable fact that you don't really need unless you go on in linear algebra. Rather, what we'll do is we'll think of these characteristic polynomials is always depending on a parameter lambda, and that the solutions of this polynomial equation are going to give us the eigenvalues. So because of its importance, we call this equation the characteristic equation for the matrix A. And one thing to note about it is because it's computed by taking the determinant of an n by n matrix, it's going to be a polynomial of degree n in its variable x or lambda. And then just some facts about polynomial equations. If you have a polynomial equation, every polynomial can be factorized over the complex numbers in the sense that once you have a polynomial of degree n, it can be factorized as a product of an overall constant and then a bunch of linear functions of the underlying variable x. So here's one linear function times another linear function times, et cetera. Since this is a polynomial degree n, you're going to have exactly n factors here. And for each factor, you'll have a corresponding offset from the variable. Those offsets there actually define the solutions of p of x is equal to 0. And so, in fact, x equals r is the solution of the equation p of x is equal to 0 only if, well, if and only if x minus r is a factor here. And so that's, in fact, how you solve higher order polynomial equations. You do so by doing a complete factorization and then identifying these offsets as the solution. All right, so that's why I stay here. The strategy for solving the characteristic equation, which is going to be an example of a polynomial equation, is to factorize the polynomial and then grab the roots. All right, so let's do a quick example. Here's a 3x3 matrix. Yeah, here's a 3x3 matrix. We'll look for the eigenvalues of A. That's going to be the solutions of the characteristic equation. This shifted matrix, A minus lambda times the identity matrix, is just A itself, where we subtracted the parameter lambda along the diagonal from the upper left to the lower right. And so for this matrix, it's already upper triangular, so that determinant's really easy to compute, right? For an upper triangular matrix, like a matrix in row echelon form, the determinant is just the product along that main diagonal. So what do we see? Well, we have a root lambda equals 1, we have another root lambda equal to 2, and we have a third root. Well, it's not really a different root. If the lambda minus 1, that equals 0 exactly when lambda minus 1 equals 0. So in fact, we have two distinct eigenvalues in this case. For this polynomial to equal 0, we either have to have lambda equal to 1 and lambda equal to 2. Remember that this condition, where it came from, is by demanding that we had non-zero vectors for which non-zero vectors that satisfied the eigenvector eigenvalue problem. All right, so now I'm going to give you a little bit more detail here in some nomenclature. So in algebra, so forget about eigenvalues for right now. If you simply have a polynomial, the fundamental theorem of algebra guarantees that it can be factorized as a product of linear polynomials, so long as you allow yourself to use complex numbers. Then you'll always be able to achieve this factorization. And then in algebra, we usually call the solutions of p of x equal to 0, we usually call those roots of the polynomial. And we call this number of factors. So here what I've done is I've taken all the factors lambda minus r1, and I've collected them together. And so r1 and r2 are, in fact, all these rk's are assumed to be distinct numbers. And then what I've done in writing it in this fashion, I've collected all the similar factors in terms where I raise lambda minus a given root. I just collect them together in the same set of factors. That way I can ascribe to a given eigenvector a certain multiplicity. And back in algebra, they're called exactly that. This number M1 is called the multiplicity of the solution R1 for the equation P of X is equal to 0. However, in linear algebra, we're going to use slightly different terminology. We'll still be looking at polynomial equations, but instead of calling the solutions of this polynomial equation roots, well, they play the role of the eigenvalues. So we'll just call them directly the eigenvalues of the matrix A. And then instead of calling them the number of factors, the number of factors that occur for a given eigenvalue, Rather than calling it the multiplicity of that root or the multiplicity of that eigenvalue, we'll have a more specific name, algebraic multiplicity, because it's going to turn out there's a different kind of multiplicity that we can associate to the to a given eigenvalue. And so here, the adjective algebraically is just meaning that the multiplicity we're concerned with here is coming from this algebraic point of view of what this equation, algebraic characterization of this polynomial, how many factors of lambda minus r occur in this polynomial, that's going to be exactly the algebraic multiplicity. All right, so I'm going to talk in a couple minutes about a different kind of multiplicity. And what that's going to be, it's going to be correspond to the number of linearly independent eigenvectors you have corresponding to the given eigenvalue. All right, so let's go back to the original matrix in that example, way back here. So here was a matrix we started off with, and we calculated its characteristic polynomial. And it turned out to be expressible as a product of three linear polynomials. You can see that the eigenvalue lambda equals 1, that factor occurs twice. And so the eigenvalue lambda equal to 1 is going to have algebraic multiplicity 2, because there's two factors here. The eigenvalue lambda equal to 2 only occurs once in the factorization of the characteristic polynomial. So we'll say it has algebraic multiplicity 1. All right, so here I just restate what I just said. Given this factorization of the characteristic polynomial, we count the number of times the similar factors occur, and then we can relate those multiplicities to particular eigenvalues. All right, so having factorized the characteristic polynomial, we've identified the eigenvalues of that matrix. What remains to solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem is to find the corresponding eigenvectors. So what do we need? The eigenvectors corresponding to a given eigenvalue R are going to be all the vectors such that the eigenvector eigenvalue condition is maintained. Well, those vectors, when we collect them together, form not only a subspace of Rn, or subset of Rn, they're actually a subspace. And we call that the eigenspace of A corresponding to the eigenvalue R, or more succinctly, the R eigenspace of the matrix A. And that's how it's defined, but this is how we compute it. It turns out that this condition is equivalent to saying that this coefficient matrix times D is equal to 0. And so what we do is we solve the linear system with this coefficient matrix in order to identify all the eigenvectors with eigenvalue R. All right, so there's a little bit of problems with my nomenclature. I mean, physicists, chemists, engineers, this is not a problem, but we tend to be really pedantic in mathematics. So when we solve the eigenvector eigenvalue problem, we do want to find this so-called eigenspace, but generally speaking, this is going to be an infinite number of vectors, and we don't want to have to write down an infinite number of vectors. So rather, the way we find the eigenspace, we find a basis for it. And how hard is that? Well, it just means we solve this homogeneous linear system, expand the solution in terms of free variables, and then we grab those constant vectors that are being multiplied by the free variables. They're going to be a basis vector, the basis vectors for this null space. We use that finite set of basis vectors as we think of those as being the eigenvectors of A, when in fact, what we really mean, this eigenspace is going to be the set of all possible linear combinations of the basis vectors for this space. All right, so So that's what I'm saying here. When you, if you want to find all the eigenvectors of a matrix A, that's kind of, it's impossible to write it down because there's infinitely many. But there'll be a finite basis for this, the space that's generated by any linearly independent set of eigenvectors. And that basis will tend to call the eigenvectors of A, when in fact, not only will these guys be eigenvectors of A, but any linear combination of them would also be an eigenvector of A with the same eigenvalue. So we abuse the language a little bit. These guys are basis for all the space of all eigenvectors of A, but I shorten that into saying that these vectors are simply the eigenvectors of A. All right, so we have a special name for the number of eigenvectors you have, number of independent eigenvectors you have. So the basis for this, the number of basis vectors you have for this space, we call that the geometric multiplicity of the eigenvalue R. So let me review the nomenclature thus far. Given an n by n matrix A, we have a polynomial we can attach to A. What it is the determinant of A minus lambda times the identity matrix. That's the characteristic polynomial. Polynomials can be factorized. When we do that to the characteristic polynomial, we can collect similar factors together. The number of times a given factor occurs, well, these offsets from the variable lambda, those are exactly the eigenvalues, and the number of factors that occur of lambda minus ri that occur in the characteristic polynomial, that's the corresponding algebraic multiplicity. So for the eigenvalue r2, the algebraic multiplicity is the number m2. Distinct from this algebraic multiplicity, well, once we have an eigenvalue, this is now a specific number, not a variable. We have a null space that we can compute by solving the equation A minus Ri times the identity matrix, X is equal to zero. We'll get a bunch of solution vectors. The basis for that, well, this is exactly the Ri eigenspace of A, and any basis for this space are gonna be the what we refer to as the eigenvectors of A, but more properly, I should call these vectors a basis for the Ri eigenspace, but we tend to call them simply eigenvectors of A. And then the number of basis vectors you have, so I'm not assuming that Ri is one-dimensional, it could be multidimensional. So if it's multidimensional, I'll have more than one basis vector, and we call the geometric multiplicity of a given eigenvalue the dimension of this space. Okay, so that's the nomenclature, and when you do the WebAssign problem set 9, most of those problems will ask you to find the eigenvalues, determine their algebraic multiplicities, their geometric multiplicity, and the corresponding eigenvectors. So what I'm going to do now is, that's basically the substance of all the problems in problem set 9. So you might note this page as you work on those problems, because this page contains all the relevant definitions. And all you have to do is compute. All right, so let's see. Before I actually do some examples, let me introduce a little bit two basic properties of these algebraic multiplicities and geometric multiplicities. So remember the geometric multiplicities, there's the number of times you have a factor of lambda minus ri in the characteristic polynomial. Now, what's going to always happen is that the sum of your algebraic multiplicities is always going to add up to the size of, essentially the size of your matrix. Why? Because if A is n by n matrix, This determinant is going to be a polynomial of degree n. So it's going to be a polynomial that looks like this. But it's also going to have a factorization. And when we factorize it, suppose I write it as lambda minus r1 to some power m1, lambda minus rk to some power mk. So we have collected together all the common factors and assigned them, thereby assigned algebraic multiplicities to each eigenvalue. What's going to happen, though, is that this polynomial of degree n has been completely factorized by linear polynomials. You can see that the degree of the highest term here is just going to be, you'll get a, just use a binomial formula or something to expand each power. The leading term is going to be lambda to the m1. Leading term of this polynomial is going to be lambda to the power mk. And when I multiply the leading terms of all these polynomials together, I'm going to get a total degree of n. So in fact, these exponents m1 through mk, they have to add up. They have to add up exactly to n, because both of these have to be degree n polynomials. All right, so that's all this is saying, that your algebraic multiplicities always sum to n. Here's a fact that's not immediately obvious, and in fact, it's a little bit tedious to prove. It turns out that the geometric multiplicities are not strictly less than, but they're less than or equal to the corresponding algebraic multiplicities. And what we'll find in the examples that we do today, that while the algebraic multiplicities have to add up to effectively the size of your matrix, the geometric multiplicities do not. When I add up the geometric multiplicities, the dimensions of the corresponding eigenspaces, they might not add up to n. And that condition is going to be relevant to the next topic we consider, which will be diagonalization of matrices. All right, so let's continue with this same example I started off with, this 3x3 matrix, for which we've already computed its characteristic polynomial and saw that it factorizes lambda minus 1, I think, squared times lambda minus 2. And what we'll do for each of these eigenvalues, we'll now determine the corresponding eigenspaces. Right, so E subscript 1, I mean the eigenspace of A with eigenvalue 1. So what it is, it's the null space of a certain coefficient matrix that I create by subtracting my given eigenvalue from the diagonal entries of the original matrix. All right, so here it is. Now when I plug in, now I have an explicit matrix. Notice all the variables have disappeared, and we can compute this this null space fairly simply. What we do is we reduce the coefficient matrix to its reduced row echelon form, and then we try to solve the linear system associated with this matrix in reduced row echelon form. But what's going to happen? This first row is going to give us an equation. 0 times x1 plus 1 times x2 plus 0 times x3 has to equal 0, or simply x2 is equal to 0. Second row with the reduced row echelon form is going to give us the condition that x3 has to equal 0. And this last row, simply as redundant or trivial, it just says 0 is equal to 0. In this first column, there's no entry. So there's no pivot in this first column. That means our first variable, x1, is actually going to be a free variable in the solution. So we can now write down the solution. We know that x2 has to equal 0, x3 has to equal 0, and x1 is arbitrary. So my solution vector has to have this form. And then when I expand in terms of the free parameter, here's my basis vector. And so I'm going to call this constant vector the eigenvector of the original matrix A corresponding to eigenvalue 1. Because I only have one free parameter, my eigenspace is actually one-dimensional. And so I'll say that the geometric multiplicity of that eigenvector, which is actually the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace, that's going to be 1. All right, so that was one worked out in detail for one of the two eigenvalues of A. We had a second eigenvalue, which was lambda equal to 2, and we'll do a similar calculation. We first of all need to figure out this eigenspace. It's going to be exactly the null space of the coefficient matrix we get by subtracting 2 from the diagonal elements of A. So there it is, explicitly simplified. And then after doing row reduction of this matrix to its reduced row echelon form, right? Here's a pivot. Above and below pivots, I have nothing but zeros, and the pivots are equal to 1. So this is the reduced row echelon form of effectively that matrix. And we now go back to equations to write down typical solution vectors. First row is telling us x1 minus x2 has to equal 0. Second row is telling us that x3 has to equal 0. Well, we'll do as typical. x2 corresponds to a column without a pivot, so that's going to be my free variable in the solution. And x3 and x1 are going to be fixed variables. That's going to leave me, when I express all the components in terms of free variables, leaves me with this expression. And so I have any eigenvector of A with eigenvalue 2 has to be a multiple of this vector, 1, 1, 0. Here's the corresponding eigenvector. And in fact, notice that since I only have one free parameter, my eigenspace is going to be one-dimensional. And so again, for the second eigenvalue, lambda equal to 2, the geometric multiplicity, the dimension of the eigenspace, is going to be 1 again. But the constant vector that's being multiplied by the free parameter, we now interpret that as the eigenvector of the original matrix A corresponding to the eigenvalue lambda equal to 2. All right, so for this particular matrix, we calculated the characteristic polynomial, and as soon as we factorize it, we can identify the eigenvalues and their algebraic multiplicities. That becomes, those two items become immediately apparent once you calculate the characteristic polynomial and factorize it. But then it took more work to actually figure out what the corresponding eigenvectors were. That's when we actually had to solve some linear systems with specific coefficient matrix. But what way it worked out is corresponding to this eigenvalue lambda equal to 1, it had algebraic multiplicity 2, and then the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace turned out to be one-dimensional. It had a single basis vector. And so this first row tells us what we've learned about properties of the eigenvalue lambda equal to 1. There, that 1 minus lambda occurs twice in the characteristic polynomial, but the solution set corresponding to the corresponding eigenspace is only one-dimensional. And so that's why the geometric multiplicity is only 1. So what this number is here is the number of vectors you've found when you've found a basis for the corresponding eigenspace. For the eigenvalue 2, well, its algebraic multiplicity was 1 because there's only one factor of 2 minus lambda in the characteristic polynomial. When we found that the when we actually found the eigenvectors corresponding to the eigenvalue lambda equal 2, we only found one linearly independent one, which is this one. And so the geometric multiplicity of the eigenvalue 2 is 1. Notice that those inequalities that I stated that if MI is the algebraic multiplicity of an eigenvalue Ri, and mu I equals the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace, or called the geometric multiplicity of the corresponding eigenvalue. Notice that for both these eigenvalues, mu I is less than or equal to mi. Because 1 is less than 2, and 1 is less than or equal to 1. So that property has been checked. And then notice also that when I add the algebraic multiplicities, 2 plus 1 equals 3. And that's exactly equal to the size of the original matrix. And that was the second identity I gave you. When you sum up all the multiplicities, you get exactly, effectively, the size of the matrix you started off with, this matrix A. So both those properties have been confirmed in this example. All right, so let's do a second example, where we'll essentially do the same calculation on a different matrix, and I'll be doing less exposition, except for the fact showing you how these calculations flow. So let's start off with this 3x3 matrix. And what I'll ask you to do is determine not only the eigenvalues and the eigenvectors, but also the algebraic and geometric multiplicities of each eigenvalue. So we begin by calculating the characteristic polynomial. We shift the matrix A along its main diagonal by a parameter lambda and calculate its determinant. Now here, you want to keep lambda as a variable. And so row reduction is probably not the method you want to do to calculate this determinant. Better to use cofactor expansions so that you don't have to worry about how do I divide by this so that I get rid of this pivot here. Don't use row reduction in these calculations. Rather, look for a cofactor expansion. And in this case, if I do a cofactor expansion along that first row, I'll have minus lambda minus 4, and then the other two terms along that first row are not going to contribute. And so what I'll need is minus 4 minus lambda times the determinant of this minor. But it's pretty clear that the determinant of that minor is 0, well, 2 minus lambda squared minus 0. And so not in calculating this determinant using the cofactor expansion, not only did I get a polynomial, but I got a polynomial that was actually pre-factorized for me. So that's a good thing. As soon as I calculate this polynomial, I've seen how it factorizes, and I can identify the roots. I'm going to need lambda equal to minus 4 or lambda equal to 2 if this polynomial is going to equal 0. So those are our two eigenvalues. We can also see that the eigenvalue negative 4 has algebraic multiplicity 1 because there's only one factor of minus 4 minus lambda, while the eigenvalue lambda equal to 2, it occurs twice in the characteristic polynomial, so the algebraic multiplicity the eigenvalue 2 is going to be 2. Right. You're right. You're right. That's absolutely true. It should have been positive 4. Wait a minute. What we need is minus lambda minus 4 to equal 0, so minus lambda is equal to 4, or lambda is equal to negative 4. We need this factor to vanish, so you set the entire thing equal to 0, and then you solve for lambda.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So you said eigenvectors were close under scale of multiplication, right? So if I had, like, a fraction whatever, can I multiply the...
Yes, yes. Yeah, and what you'll find, particularly with your WebAssign problem, they might actually demand that you put it in some standard form so it can recognize it. Yeah, and so, yeah, it's often the case, and so that it's easier to write down, too, if you have a common factor like one-third in each term, then multiply the whole vector by 3, and then you only have integer entries to deal with. Yeah, so you can freely adjust your basis vectors. We not require them to have a specific length. What we might like is them be easy to write down. Okay, so, and in fact, that's what actually happens in this case here. For this eigenvalue lambda equal to -4, to find its corresponding eigenspace, I have to create the coefficient matrix by subtracting the eigenvalue from the diagonal elements of A. That produces this matrix. And then you got to do the rigmarole of solving the homogeneous linear system with this coefficient matrix. And I don't do the row reduction, but this matrix row reduces to this matrix in reduced row echelon form. Making these pivots equal to 1 kind of forces you to take these guys to be fractions. But as far as writing down the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue -4, you can certainly use this vector is an eigenvector of A with eigenvalue -4. But so is, I want to get rid of this denominator. So I'll multiply the whole eigenvector by 7. And I'll get -6, -5, and 7. This is also what we would call the eigenvector of A with eigenvalue -4, even though this definite article is really not appropriate. Any scalar multiple of either one of these vectors is still going to be an eigenvector with eigenvalue -4. Okay, and frequently when you're doing WebAssign problems, you're probably most likely to get the answer that WebAssign wants by, if you have fractional entries in your eigenvectors, to just sort of find a common factor that will make all the components integers and then feed that in. Okay, so that's the analysis of that first eigenvalue. We had a second eigenvalue, lambda equal to 2. So let's calculate the corresponding eigenspace. So here it is in a calculational sense. It's the null space of the matrix we get by subtracting the number 2 from the diagonal elements of A. We subtract the eigenvalue along that diagonal. We get this matrix. And once I reduce the row echelon form, I get this matrix. By the way, this is something I should point out. When I'm calculating these eigenspaces, once I do the row reduction to row echelon form, I got a zero row at the bottom. You'd really need that zero row. If you're trying to find this null space or trying to find the corresponding eigenspace, if after the row reduction of the coefficient matrix to reduce row echelon form, you're not getting a zero row, that means you've made a mistake. You've made a calculational error. Because the reason why we chose this particular number, -4, is because for that particular number, the determinant of this matrix is equal to 0. And that means that if look along this main diagonal, the determinant of this matrix is 1 times 1 times 0. We need that factor of 0 here, so the determinant of this matrix is actually equal to 0, so that we have non-trivial solutions of the corresponding linear system. So one check that you'll always find early on in these calculation of eigenvectors is you choose an eigenvalue, You construct the matrix, and then you try to calculate its null space. So you row reduce to reducer echelon form. You always have to have at least one zero row at the bottom. Otherwise, you've made a mistake somewhere. All right, so let's see here. Here's the two eigenspace of the matrix A. This is the null space of this matrix. After we've row reduced to reducer echelon form, it's the null space of this matrix. And from this, we can read off the eigenvectors. What we need is, from the first row, it says that x1 has to equal 0. The second row with this matrix in reducer echelon form is telling me that x3 has to equal to 0. And the variable corresponding to the second column, where there's no pivots, that's left free. And so the null space of this is generated by this single vector. That single vector, then, the eigenvector of the matrix A with eigenvalue 2. All right, so summarizing this calculation, here's the original matrix. We calculated its characteristic polynomial and observed that we have two eigenvalues, lambda equal to negative 4 and lambda equal to 2. The eigenvalue lambda equal to 2 has algebraic multiplicity 2 because there's two factors of 2 minus lambda in the characteristic polynomial. The eigenvalue lambda equals 4, negative 4, has only one factor in the corresponding factor in the characteristic polynomial, so its algebraic multiplicity is 1. Once we calculated the eigenvalues, we then proceeded to analyze the corresponding matrices and determine the dimensions of their null space. Those basis vectors for the null space of the corresponding coefficient matrices are exactly these guys. Since we only have one basis vector for the eigenvalue minus 4, the geometric multiplicity is 1. And again, for the eigenvalue lambda equal to 2, we only have one basis vector. That's why we have geometric multiplicity of the eigenvalue 2 equal to 1. Let me do one last trivial example. Suppose I have the matrix, the identity matrix, and let's calculate the eigenvectors and eigenvalues of the identity matrix, 3x3 identity matrix. Determinant 1 minus lambda times I is just going to be the determinant of 1 minus lambda, 0, 0, 0, 1 minus lambda, 0, 0, 0, 1 minus lambda. And what's going to happen here is this determinant is going to be exactly 1 minus lambda to the third. And so this matrix only has one eigenvalue. Its eigenvalue is going to be lambda equal to 1. And it has algebraic multiplicity. So the eigenvalue equals 1, and it has algebraic multiplicity 3. What about the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace? So the one eigenspace of the identity matrix is going to be the null space of 1 minus 1 times the identity matrix. It's just going to be the null space. Well, as soon as I subtract 1 from the diagonal here, it's just going to be the 0 matrix. And the 0 matrix times any vector is always equal to 0. So, in fact, every vector is an eigenvector of the identity matrix. Well, you could have seen that simply from that identity. The identity matrix times V is equal to V. Well, think of this as 1 times V, and now I displayed 1 as the eigenvalue of any vector V with respect to the identity matrix. Well, this is all sort of self-consistent. In this example, though, what I see is that the one eigenspace is going to be three-dimensional vector. It's going to be a three-dimensional vector space because any vector in R3 is going to satisfy this condition. And so for the identity matrix, The algebraic multiplicity is just going to be equal to the size of the matrix, while the geometric multiplicities of the eigenvectors is also going to equal the dimension of the size of the matrix, also going to equal 3 in this case. Okay, so I may do some more examples on Friday, but if you can now done homework set 8, you can compute determinants. You should be able to work through all the problems in homework set 9 as well. And if you do so before Friday, then I can, if you run into any difficulties, I can comment on that. One last thing. I still have a bunch of uncollected exams. If you haven't picked it up yet, do so now. If otherwise, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, because I'm sort of sporadically on campus otherwise, I'm going to leave them in the math office. All you would have to do is go to 401 Math Science Computer Science Building right next to Whitehurst. Go to the front desk and ask them for your exam, and they'll be able to give it to you.